Hello, and welcome to the Og Blog Podcast, which, if it isn't already your favorite podcast about peanuts and peanuts-related books, this must be your first time here. So welcome! I'm your host, professional peanuts nerd Nat Gertler, and boy, have I got a good show for you today. I gotta tell you, folks, this voice may hide it, but I'm actually kind of a shy guy. But when I saw the chance to reach out to Gary Berghoff to appear on the show, I screwed up my courage and took it. Some of you may only know Gary from his work as Radar O'Reilly in the movie and classic TV show MASH, but what we'll be talking about here is his very special place in Peanuts history, and his own comic strip that was fairly recently released in book form, Gary Berghoff's The Home. So let's get right into this. Now, you were the original onstage Charlie Brown back in 1967. How did...
Yeah, 68, actually. Well, wait a minute. No, it was 67.
It was 67. It was over half a century ago now, which seems sort of ridiculous.
Amazing, but it was also the most exciting time for me in my career because it actually established my career.
Yeah, I should imagine that was a big hit of attention there. That was quite a hit for an off-Broadway show. How did you land the part?
After 6 years of study and dozens of auditions in New York, none of them leading to anything lasting or, you know, establishing a career, I suddenly got a phone call from a producer named Arthur Whitelaw, and that was the great blessing of my life. He had been looking for 6 months for someone to play your good man, to play Charlie Brown. And one of my friends who was also a struggling actress at that time was Barbara Minkus. And Barbara had been signed by Arthur and his co-producer, Gene Pearson, to play Lucy. She didn't stay with it. She dropped out during rehearsals to accept an offer of a Broadway show uptown. But she had recommended me for the role. We had auditioned together on many auditions, and she told them that I had a Charlie Brown heart because I hired the handicap for my auditions. That was her impression, and that was the impression that was left on Arthur Whitelaw. So they were looking for me. I had left town to go back to my parents for a six-month hiatus to decide whether I wanted to continue on in New York or not. And I finally came back, and almost the same day that I came back, the phone rang, and there was Arthur Whitelaw. What a great blessing. I think it was a gift from God. I went down, and I auditioned, and I got the role, and that, the rest is history. That little musical became so revered and popular in New York, among the critics, and not only that, among actors in New York and Hollywood elite, they all came to see that little musical. The reviewers said, go down to Theater 80 St. Mark's. You've got to see this. It's one of the best musicals in town. And one evening, Otto Preminger, the great film director, came to see the play. And the next day, I got a call from his office to come and discuss his future motion pictures and my possible participation. And I had a wonderful interview with him, and then nothing happened. So a year later, I am recreating the role in Los Angeles, and I get a call from my agent to go to 20th Century Fox and meet him there for a new motion picture called MASH, being directed by a director whose name I didn't recognize, and being produced by a producer by the name of Ingo Preminger. And I didn't make the connection at first, but Ingo was Otto's little brother. So that's how I got the motion picture MASH. Otto Preminger recommended me to his brother for his motion picture MASH.
Well, that was a great recommendation. I mean, you went from the motion picture there to the TV series, 6 Emmy nominations, an Emmy win, and on. So that somebody had a very good taste
then,
there.
Yes, and then 20 years of theater, playing 110 theaters in the United States. I mean, it was suddenly a full-bodied career that lasted 30 years.
Now, when you got in on Your Good Man, Charlie Brown, there wasn't a full script yet, was there?
There was never a script. Yeah, Charles Schulz's actual published strips. And we simply chose, working under the masterful direction of Joe Hardy, we chose strips that we really loved as a cast. And we started playing them out on stage during the rehearsal period. And Joe Hardy would arrange them into a storyline. But the strips, we would play the strips complete and never say a word unless it was Charles Schulz's word or words.
Mm-hmm.
And that's how it developed. There was never a script. What we did have was a wonderful score by Clark Esser. It was a wonderful grouping of songs that we added, intermingled with those strips that were being put together, which eventually took the shape of A Day in the Life of Charlie Brown.
And that was great. And how does it feel, the decisions you were making then of things to suggest, they're still being performed like thousands of times a year all over the country, all over the world?
Oh, yeah. I hear that it is performed all over the world even today. It's timeless. A man like Charles Schulz, a genius like Charles Schulz, what makes him a genius is that he creates universally recognized emotions and situations that is understood everywhere. It's part of the human experience. And so it becomes timeless.
Yes, absolutely.
There's that same quality to MASH when you think about it. The MASH doesn't just represent the Korean War. It represents the frustration and the human experiential quality of all wars, which is probably the worst situation you can put human beings in.
Now, as you said, Schulz did some amazing stuff, but you were inspired to create your own comic strip decades later. Can you tell me what caused you to create The Home?
Well, you know, after years of knowing Charles Schulz and his material, and I mean, I began to discover the power of a comic strip. If it was written with that universal quality. And I just started thinking about the one universal thing that we all experienced together eventually in life, and that's old age. And I started thinking about what people did when they were too old to function on their own, but if they could join forces and function together somehow, because not everybody loses function, the same function. So if old people could get together and buy their own home and manage it themselves, like a property owners association, if you will, that would make for some very good comedic situations, and also poignant situations. Because they all have to become, in a sense, strange bedfellows, all from different backgrounds, but they had one thing in common, and that was their mutual independence to the end.
Mm-hmm.
That was the concept that I didn't see happening anywhere else in literature. The Home comic strip was something that developed over a period of years, and all people involved with it, originally a wonderful cartoonist and dear friend of mine, Richard Castorino, did the line drawings. I did the writing, but neither one of us had the time to really promote it. So it just sort of kept going without ever being published. And then I wonder when Richard Castorino, God bless him, passed away, and I had to get a new cartoonist, Mark O'Neill. Mark decided to approach Bitter Manor Media and have it published as a book. That's what it is today.
Yeah, it's a book collecting a bunch of never-before-published comic strips set at this community-run retirement home with all of these characters with very different personalities. They're not people who would naturally be together for other reasons. It's sort of like the Odd Couple times seven. But they're forced together, and they sort of make things work in their own way, and it's interesting stuff. And Bear Manor is the same folks who published your autobiography.
My autobiography, to MASH and back, I mentioned so many of the things, especially Charlie Brown, your good man Charlie Brown. I mentioned that whole sequence of events. I give it special notice in the book because it was the culmination of 6 years of hard work as an acting student and as an actor who was seeking work in New York alone. It was a very tenuous time, but it was also a time that was quite common among young actors, meaning it takes you through the hard times, the struggle times.
Yep.
And I thought all young actors who might read the book would be interested to know what that was like and how difficult it is, and yet how hopeful their careers could be if they just stuck it out, just kept pursuing it and didn't give up. They have to persevere.
Oh, yes. Yeah, well, I'm always one of those people that tells folks, I can't guarantee that if you keep trying, you'll succeed, but I can guarantee that if you don't keep trying, you won't.
That's right. that's very well said, yeah. I wish I had said it myself.
So, all right, you've been a major actor. You have created comics. You used to be, maybe you still are, a drummer. You've done some amateur painting. What's next? Anything else?
Well, I'm dedicated to having the happiest retirement I possibly can. And the one promise I made myself 11 years ago when I retired, it was that I would never do anything that I did before retirement. In other words, I would not pursue the same things. And that's what led me to write the book, to MASH and back, and also to... to publish a comic strip, but not to work on it anymore. I just have an entirely different life, which I think is more dignified as a human being. I'm enjoying my children, my grandchildren, and life as the good Lord intended.
That's wonderful. Well, thank you very much for taking the time to talk with me today. I really appreciate that.
Annette, you're most welcome. And to all of your Charlie Brown fans out there, you have excellent taste. It's a wonderful comic strip, and it conveys something very universal and very much a part of humanity, I think, that we can all take solace in. That's the part of first discovery. Innocence at first discovery, that must never be forgotten because that's what we're all fighting for.
Absolutely. All right. Thank you, sir.
And you're welcome, sir.
You have a good
Bye.
Day. Bye. Well, that was great and exciting for me, and I hope it was enjoyable for you as well. I'd like to thank Mr. Berghoff for his generosity in taking the time to talk, and also the folks at publisher Bear Manor Media for helping to put this together. Bear Manor Media publishes both the book of Gary's comic strip, Gary Berghoff's The Home, and Gary's autobiography, To MASH and Back, My Life in Poems and Songs, as well as many other books with an emphasis on classic Hollywood. You can take a look at their full catalog at their website, bearmanormedia.com. That's bear as in grizzly, manor as in a mansion, and media as in the plural of medium. bearmanormedia.com. And I'll have links for ordering Gary's book on the blog. And for those of you who are new to the podcast, we have over 30 episodes already available through your favorite podcast distribution point, swinging into all sorts of odd details in the Peanuts world. And honestly, if I had to recommend one, go back and listen to episode number one, which is about Dolores, the Latina Peanuts character that no one knows about. And stop by the blog at blog.augh.com. That's AAUGH.com. Where I'm constantly posting news, reviews, and insight for the Peanuts book fan. If you have any questions, suggestions, comments, insults, or ideas for future episodes, you can send them to questions@og.com. And until next time, may you find your own off-Broadway success, no matter how far from Broadway you happen to be. May you always have a little extra warning when the helicopters are coming. And may all your griefs be good ones.